Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Most of our joys and sorrows come from our connections with other people. So why does so much of our communications with others result in so much conflict and misunderstandings? How might we do better in giving others the love that we really have in our hearts? Also, how can we get better in dealing with the unavoidable stresses and injustices of our very imperfect world? Today, we'll be looking at how we can live and interact with others with open-hearted strength with our guest, Dr. Rick Hansen. Rick Hansen is a psychologist and senior fellow at the University of California, Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center, and a summa cum laude graduate of UCLA. He's founder of the Wellspring Institute for Neuroscience and Contemplative Wisdom, also the founder and president of Global Compassion Coalition. He's the author of many books, including Making Great Relationships, Simple Practices for Solving Conflicts, Building Connection, and Fostering Love. Join us for the next hour as we explore effective strategies for relating better than ever with all of our relationships with Dr. Rick Hansen. I'm speaking with Rick in his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. Welcome to New Dimensions. Rick, welcome.
Justine, I'm so happy to be here. And I have the highest regard for you and for New Dimensions. I think of just an extremely short list of institutions over the last, how long has it been? 40 years? 50?
Well, 50. We're in our 50th year now.
Yeah. Preeminent institutions, spreading the light, spreading the truth, bringing in new perspectives, warming the heart. It's an honor to be here. And I don't flatter people. I'm a write speech kind of person. And I just want to say all this from my heart. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I just feel honored that you have been such a listener and an appreciator of this work, as do I yours. So,
thank you.
In this time, Rick, there are so many difficulties that occur with our interactions with others. And even if we live alone, we are totally wired up to an overwhelming number of people and opportunities for misunderstanding. I'd love to know what your experience in your life, how is there a need to have strategies close at hand to help us with these frustrations that, you know, pop up spontaneously as we try and cope with the 21st century? Why do we need these strategies close at hand?
Yeah, there are probably two currents that have flowed into an answer to that question. One was in my own background as a kid. I was a very shy, nerdy, very young in school kind of kid, socially awkward, very insecure, feeling really inadequate, clueless, really. And I've had a lot to learn. So one of the things I've really appreciated from the inside out, based on my own path, is how useful it is to know what to say, or to know what not to say, or to know what to think or not to think. I'm using the word think broadly, to know what you're doing inside the inner temple of your own being, right? So I really have learned over the years the value of being more able to be patient with others who are aggravating, while at the same time being prepared very skillfully to lay down the law or draw a boundary or speak truth to power or be assertive when you need to be, hopefully with a warm and open heart. How do you bring those together? How do you navigate tricky negotiations, whether it's in your family? My wife and I have been married for 41 years. I had a lot to learn there. Parents of two adult kids, lots to learn there. And all the rest of that, including how do you navigate situations today that are often white hot when you're just dealing with somebody you like a lot. Maybe they're your friend, your in-law, your cousin, and their politics are worlds apart from your own. How do you navigate that? Okay, that's one. The other current flowing into my answer here is 40 years, probably 30 at least, officially, as a counselor. And working with a lot of families, couples, and, you know, different kinds of relationships, including in work settings. And what I saw again and again and again is that people would have kind of okay relationships, but there was the weight of things unsaid. There were conflicts that were just not being managed well. Sometimes people were blowing up. Sometimes there was a stony silence. Sometimes you put up with things, but they were not getting better. Very often I saw people who just didn't know what to say next. They didn't know what to do next. So in this book, as you know, 50 extremely short chapters, usually around 3 pages, that are really about what to do next. What can you think? What can you do inside your own mind that will be helpful to you? And what can you do with your words? Because with what we think and say each day, we make our relationships, which is full of hopeful possibility, because then we have the power to make them better.
This particular book really does give us something to chew on and to grapple with in whatever thing that we're going through at the moment. So I want to say, first of all, that one of the underlying themes is that slowing down and deep breathing. I remember you writing about how our deep breath actually engages our parasympathetic nervous system. I mean, it actually has a physical effect. So please tell us how that works.
Oh, that's great. When we look back at most of the interactions that went badly, it happened really quickly. Often. And so slowing it down neurologically gives your more recently evolved regions in your brain, mainly behind your forehead and the top of the brain, time to catch up to the emotional hijacking of more ancient regions like the amygdala, et cetera, that are just already racing down the highway. So if you buy yourself time, just slowing it down for a second or two or three, kind of your grandmother's advice. Count to 10, sweetie. That was good advice.
Yes.
Slowing it down really matters. And one great way to do that, that you're pulling out, is to draw on some very cool, nerdy brain science that's very useful, that recognizes that when we slow down our breathing and especially extend the exhalation, what that does is it naturally slows the heart rate while engaging the parasympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system, this regulatory system, autonomic, it's regulatory. Now we're tapping the brakes. We're slowing it down just by a long exhalation. Nobody even needs to know you're doing that in that tense business meeting or, you know, when the in-laws are around the table yelling at each other about, you know, Fox News or something. Slow it down. The other thing that's really interesting is that many of our conflicts have to do with taking things very personally. Understandably, we get possessive, we get positional, we get self-righteous. I really know about building the case inside my mind at 3 a.m, or I'm going to tell them or write them or something. One good thing to do to help yourself take it less personally is to tune into the internal sensations of breathing. So while you're slowing down, you can help yourself take things less personally and instead see the bigger picture. You can still stand up for yourself as a person without getting caught up in the self-contraction.
I want to say something about that, Rick, because this is like in speaking, when we slow it down, it has been my experience that when I really stop and check in with my body sensations or even my emotional being before I speak, I get beyond the content of what I'm just going to kind of put out in the world. I'm just going to respond or react to something. I might find myself saying something surprising to even me. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're getting more in touch with yourself. You're getting, you know, you're one of the first chapter of the book is be loyal to yourself. It, you know, get on your own side. It does not mean being dominating or abusive with others. It just means being a friend to yourself, like you would for another person. And as part of that, absolutely, we need to explore ourselves. We need to be mindful of what we're really feeling. I think probably the second chapter in the book, from memory, is titled Let Be, Let Go, Let In, which is about this fundamental process, these three great ways to practice with your own mind. And the first of which is the foundation. Be with what you're experiencing. Slow it down even so you can catch up to your own innards. You know, really foundational. That's not the only practice, though. We need to work with the mind, not just be with the mind. And we need to act skillfully with other people. But absolutely, some later chapters are things like speak from the heart.
Right.
You know,
right.
Be in touch with your experiences as you share it with others.
If we're speaking from a heart, it's actually a heart center speaking. I mean, it goes beyond the head, then it adds to maybe your intellectual knowledge and what you know. There's an authenticity in the conversation. I think that's what I'm talking about here is when we are with someone and they're speaking authentically, it's like we automatically perk up to listen, don't we?
Yes, they're in touch with their feelings. They're not running a number on us. They're treating us as a thou, rather than as an it, using Martin Buber's structure here. And just looking at you right now, Justine, because we're seeing each other, I'm minded to say that part of what we're talking about is trusting yourself in a deep way. And I find this to be especially important for people who belong to groups, such as girls and women, who tend to be socialized to not trust themselves.
And, over
defer to authority in patriarchy or whatever the structures may be. And so trusting yourself is really, really part of kind of owning your own truth and being more relaxed about releasing it into the world.
We'll talk more about that in just one moment. I'm here with Dr. Rick Hansen. He's the author of Making Great Relationships, Simple Practices for Solving Conflicts, Building Connection, and Fostering Love. And you can be in touch with him and his work. Go to Rick Hansen, spelled SONHANSON.net. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Thank you.
I'm here with Dr. Rick Hansen, and he's the author of Making Great Relationships, as well as many other books. So, Rick, you just have a wonderful library that anyone can tune into and just be supported in very deep and authentic ways. Compassion is a big one for you and what's important to you. And what I love about what you talk about when you bring up compassion, especially in this book, you talk about it as, first of all, be compassionate toward ourselves.
Right. Living hurts sometimes. And it hurts a lot sometimes. And in fact, sometimes it hurts all the time, even a lot. And compassion is a natural caring response to suffering broadly. And we can bring it to ourselves as well as to others. Much research shows that many people are much better at being compassionate toward others than they tend to be toward themselves. Actually, as a detail, that's kind of interesting, related to what I was bringing up a moment ago about the ways that girls and women are socialized. Men, you know, tend to be more self-compassionate than women tend to be on average. That's a generalization, partly because women tend to be so self-critical, partly because of a lot of the messaging, of course, in their culture. So self-compassion. Now, to be clear, self-compassion or compassion in general does not mean agreement or approval. And one of the things I work on is I work on my capacity to have compassion for someone I disagree with immensely, like Donald Trump. We can have compassion while being very clear in our moral view. Similarly, we can have compassion for ourselves while guiding ourselves along the way. We don't have to beat ourselves up. We can guide ourselves. We can keep functioning and keep performing and keep succeeding while still having compassion for ourselves. And research shows, again, that self-compassionate people are more resilient, they're more able to bounce back, and they tend to be more ambitious because they're more willing to risk flopping. You know, they don't want
to
flop.
That's interesting.
But they're not going to kill themselves if they flop or be super harsh to themselves, right? So self-compassion is a very, very, very good thing.
Well, I'm thinking of when I was delving into your work here, I thought of it for myself, building my compassion muscle.
Yes.
Is what I thought. And I thought, like, okay, all right, here's something. I live by myself these days. Michael, my partner of many years, has passed on, and so I'm living on my own.
Yeah.
So I'm not in touch with people rubbing shoulders in a household, so to speak.
Yeah.
However, I am rubbing shoulders with those people, we would call it customer service.
Mm-hmm.
And you make that phone call, and then you get, you know, you're trying to talk to someone, a real live person, and it goes on and on and on and on. And finally, you get to that person after maybe you've been online for a half an hour or more, just waiting. Mm-hmm. And that frustration builds up and builds up. And you just want to pour all of that frustration out on this poor person on the other end of the line trying to help you. And that's what I'm talking about, where that building my muscle of compassion for myself and for that person to not just blow up there in frustration. Maybe others feel this too, can feel this.
Oh, yeah. One of the striking things is that you may know the saying from Alcoholics Anonymous that resentment is like taking poison and waiting for others to die. Or the parable or metaphor from early Buddhism, getting angry at others is like throwing hot coals with bare hands. Both people get burned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really helpful to appreciate that when we get caught up in rancor or ill will against others, that's a weight in our own heart. It's a burden on us, and it's stressful on the inside, which has long-term bad effects on both health and longevity. The art that I find really interesting, and in a way I really wrote this book about it, how do you bring together love and heart and kindness and compassion? How do you bring that together with standing up for yourself and being assertive and clear and strong and managing the understandable emotionally negative reactions to other people? I've been engaged in personal practice easily since 50 years. Still, things happen. People are, you know, rude to me in a meeting or cut me off on the freeway or my wife says something kind of snippy. It's normal. Okay. How do we do both? How do we be real and big monkeys? That's what we are. How do we be our nature? How do we stand up for ourselves? And how do we do it in a framework of love? And that's what the book is really about. It's about the how-to. There's all this preaching about, you ought to do it, you ought to do it, you ought to do it. Great, tell me how. Tell me how. This book's about telling me how.
yes, exactly. And you said something earlier about that inner critic that we have, that compassion for ourselves, and we're very critical of ourselves. But you also bring up another item. I mean, there's so many how-to books about the self-critic, our inner critic. We all know that one. It's all over the place. But you talk about our self-protector. I love that. That just sort of popped out for me, self-protector. Tell us about our self-protector.
Oh, this is such an important point. I'm so glad you picked it up. So the mind is like a village. It's a lot of characters, like a zoo, if it's my mind. And so some of them, and they're all trying to help you, but they often do it in misguided ways. So you have maybe these parts often internalized from how other people treated you, even as a kid, that are yelling at you or shooting you or guilt-tripping you or shaming you or pressuring you constantly to always, be better today. Fine. What we can do is we can push back against those pressuring, pushy, punishing voices, but that takes a lot of work. It takes time. It's actually more effective, especially in the beginning, to build up your inner allies, build up your friends inside you, those who see the good in you, the parts of you that see the good in you, that are encouraging, that are nurturing, that are kind. Maybe they're the internalization of coaches you've had who were good coaches. I think of rock climbing guides I've had who in a joking way will say, Rick, stop whining, start climbing. But they say it with a smile. They're kind about it. And they're telling me what to do to be better. There's a place for that. So how do you grow those parts of yourself? You can use positive neuroplasticity. What that means is that when you're having an experience of guiding yourself, in seeing the good in yourself, appreciating yourself, when another person is seeing the good in you, when you're having these experiences, those songs are playing on your inner iPod, slow down and turn on the recorder. Take in the good. This is a lot of my work on the internalization of beneficial experiences to steepen your growth curve and your healing curve and to build up over time emotional residues, somatic residues in your body that are inner strengths of various kinds. So just like I said, when you get that kind of support, slow it down. Take it in. And those voices, those allies inside you will become increasingly powerful and more able to stand up against, that little Mr. Nasty who's yelling at you from the other side of the room.
Our inner Mrs. Nasty, right? Yeah, exactly. Right. But that also takes me to your story that you bring up, and we've heard many times the story of the two wolves inside. The one wolf that's angry and, full of fear also and other things. And then the other wolf that's more loving and empathetic and friendly and so forth. And what you brought up with that, and I know it's which wolf are you going to feed, and that we've heard that story before. But one thing that you brought up here has to do with if even if we hate that one wolf that brings up fear and envy and all of that stuff, that energy will actually make it stronger. So in other words, our resistance sometimes is the very thing that's what we're resisting gets bigger. So I'd love for you to talk about resistance and how we take in some of this stuff that is not comfortable to take in.
Such a great question. Three things, two of which don't work. Okay. Thing number one is to identify with the parts of yourself that are problematic or reactions, to get caught up in ruminating so you're identified with it. That doesn't work well. You know, they did me dirt, I'm going to get them, vengeance, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't work, okay? Second thing that does not work is resisting or fighting with that part of yourself, arguing against it, getting caught up and obsessing about it, where it's like one part of you is like Gollum in Lord of the Rings, you know, kill Frodo. No, don't kill Frodo. Blah, blah, blah. Back and forth. You know, poor Gollum was going crazy. Didn't work. You know, the kill Frodo voice sure didn't go away. If anything, it kind of feeds it. It tries to suck you in. It's like that annoying person, you know, at the other end of the bar is trying to get you into an argument. Stay out of the argument. Or a troll on social media. That doesn't work. Okay, what does work? The third thing that works is to step back from those parts of yourself. They're there, they're trying to help you, but to be mindfully aware of them with a lot of spaciousness. So that angry, hateful, resentful, vengeful voice is still ranting away in a space of awareness that's untroubled. And what starts to happen is that you immediately disrupt the reinforcing of that part of yourself because you're not feeding it at all. You're not feeding it by agreeing with it or by fighting with it. You're not feeding it in either way. You're being mindfully aware of it. You're stepping back from it. You might get sucked in again, many times, in fact, but then you just step back again. You step back again. And after a while, that becomes your habit. More and more, your mind is quiet. There's a field that's quiet in which noisy voices sometimes are yammering.
You know, you have an analogy that you mention in your writing, and that's the sky is not affected by the clouds. And I love that. That just like, oh, right. Okay. And that's, I think, what you're talking about a bit. You know, the clouds exist, the anger exists, but we don't have to be affected by it. I'm here, want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Dr. Rick Hansen, and he's the author of Making Great Relationships, Simple Practices for Solving Conflicts, Building Connections, and Fostering Love. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Dr. Rick Hansen, author of many books, including Making Great Relationships. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the difficulty of coping with all of our relationships and how do we